This is VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr., Anna Mateo, and Dan Friedel. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
American technology company Intel says it plans to build a $29 billion computer chip manufacturing center in the state of Ohio. Two chip factories will be built on a 400-hectare site northeast of the city of Columbus, the company announced on January 21st. Building is expected to begin in late 2022, and production is set to start in 2025. The two factories are expected to create 3,000 company positions and 7,000 building jobs, Intel and local officials said. The center is also expected to support tens of thousands of additional jobs for suppliers and partners. Intel Chief Executive Officer Pat Gelsinger told Reuters the $20 billion investment could grow to $100 billion and an additional six factories in the future. Intel's announcement comes after years of heavy dependence on Asia for the worldwide production of computer chips. The Semiconductor Industry Association says the U.S. share of the worldwide chip manufacturing market has decreased from 37% in 1990 to just 12% today. Chip shortages have hurt the ability of American automakers to produce vehicles. The shortages have affected other industries as well. The United States and Europe are pushing to aggressively increase their ability to produce chips. Several chip makers last year expressed an interest in expanding their American operations if the U.S. government is able to make it easier to build chip plants. Chip makers have reacted by expanding their manufacturing sites to help reduce shortages. Samsung announced in November it plans to build a $17 billion factory near Austin, Texas. Micron Technology, based in Boise, Idaho, said it will invest $150 billion worldwide over the next 10 years to develop its line of memory chips. It said it could expand manufacturing in the U.S. if it receives tax credits to help make up for higher operating costs in America. U.S. lawmakers have been urging House and Senate leaders to fully finance a law meant to deal with the semiconductor chip shortage. The $52 billion Chips for America Act permits a series of federal investments to support U.S. chip manufacturers. Separate federal legislation currently being considered would also create a new tax credit for investment in chip manufacturing centers. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. As a 16-year-old boy looked closely at a mouse, it ran around an enclosed area in a laboratory. Hi, Jacob 1. I'm Jake. Jake Litvag named the mouse, but they share more than just names. Scientists genetically engineered Jacob, the mouse, to be similar to Jake in one important genetic way. That mouse and its relatives are the first in the world to have the same missing gene that scientists say may cause Jake's condition, autism. Scientists at Washington University in St. Louis raised the mice from stem cells that came from Jake's blood. They wanted to study his condition. Jake's parents, Joe and Lisa Litvag, visited the laboratory back in December 2021. They thought that meeting the scientists and the mice would help Jake understand his important part in the research. He now considers autism something to be proud of, rather than something that makes him different from others. "Oh, wow, cool," Jake said as he watched the research mice. Walking out of the lab, Lisa Litvag cried as she thought about her son's cells helping others. After meeting the mice, the family visited another lab, where Jake looked through a microscope at his own stem cells. "That's me. That's cool stuff. I never saw anything like that in my life," Jake said, as his dad pulled him close. Jake's father, Joe Litvag, told the Associated Press that he and his family are deeply proud to be part of the research. He added, "What do we live this life for? It's ultimately to try to, in one way, shape, or form, be of service to others."
Autism starts in childhood and leads to problems forming relationships and communicating with others. Autism disorders include a large group of conditions. The abilities and needs of people with autism can also be very different. Some people with autism can live independently. Others have severe disabilities and require lifelong care and support. The AP reports that 1 in 44 children in the United States has an autism spectrum disorder, ASD. On its website, the World Health Organization says that worldwide, that number is about 1 in 160 children. The Litvags saw early on that Jake was not developing the same as other children. He could not walk without help until he was 4. He struggled to speak complete sentences in first grade. At first, no one knew why. Jake had a mix of different qualities. He had difficulty calming down and controlling his reactions. But he was also social and funny. He was 5 years old when doctors said he had autism. Then the Litvags heard that an expert on the genetics of autism was giving a talk at the St. Louis Science Center. There, they met Dr. John Constantino, who began seeing Jake as a patient. About 5 years later, Constantino proposed genetic testing. The testing found the missing copy of the MYT1L gene. This gene is believed to cause 1 out of every 10,000 to 50,000 autism cases. The finding brought the family peace. They had heard that autism had other causes, like difficulties during birth. Lisa Litvag said, "For a long time, I thought it was something that I did." Joe Litvag said that his family came to understand that they did not do anything wrong. It's just that people are born all the time with genetic differences, he said. A large multinational study that appeared in JAMA Psychiatry in 2019 estimated that up to 80% of the risk for autism comes from genetics. Jake's mother said she never wanted her son to feel badly about his condition. She added that the family continues to support the idea that because of his autism, he has important gifts to share.
When Constantino suggested studying the MYT1L gene, the Litvags happily agreed. To start the research, Jake's family raised about $70,000 from family and friends. Scientists then were able to turn that money into $4 million in research aid from the National Institutes of Health. Researcher Kristen Kroll and her team reprogrammed cells from Jake's blood into stem cells. These special cells can create different kinds of cells in the body. Scientist Joseph Doherty and his team used Jake's genetic information. They reproduced Jake's genetic mutation in the mice. To do this, they used the gene editing tool CRISPR. Since starting the research about 3 years ago, scientists have raised around 100 mice with Jake's mutation. They are now using the great-great-grandchildren of the first mouse they engineered. They recently published their research with mice in Neuron.
Doherty and his team said they hope their research on MYT1L will lead to treatments to improve or correct the problems the mutation causes. They are sharing their findings with scientists studying other genes related to autism. They are also trying to discover how different genes work together to cause the condition. The Simons Foundation Autism Research Initiative says that more than 100 genes have strong evidence linking them to autism. It also says there are several hundred more genes thought to be linked. Doherty said understanding autism will require finding one or two things shared across different forms of the disorder. These could be targets for treatment. Although not everyone with autism wants treatment, Doherty said it could help those who do.
Since the research began, Doherty has been writing notes to the Litvags, explaining the latest discoveries. But as a scientist, he is mostly removed from the people behind the research. When the Litvag family visited the lab last December, Doherty wanted to share some news in person. The missing gene does not seem to shorten life. The mice live 2 to 3 years, the same as their brothers and sisters. Joe Litvag asked hopefully, "So, a normal lifespan?" "Yes," Doherty answered. "As far as the researchers can see, the mice with Jake's genes live as long as the others." Joe Litvag turned to his son. "So, Jake, maybe you will live to be 100. "I will be 112, Jake said, smiling. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Dan Friedel.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Larry West and Tony Riggs continue the story of President Woodrow Wilson.
In 1917, Europe was at war. It was the conflict known as World War I. After 3 years of fighting, Europe's lands were filled with the sights and sounds of death. But still, the armies of the Allies and the Central Powers continued to fight. The United States had tried to keep out of the European conflict. It declared its neutrality. In the end, however, neutrality was impossible. Germany was facing starvation because of a British naval blockade. To break the blockade, German submarines attacked any ship that sailed to Europe. That included ships from neutral nations, like the United States. The German submarines sank several American ships. Many innocent people were killed.
German submarine attacks finally forced the United States into the war. It joined the Allies, Britain, France, and Russia. Like most Americans, President Wilson did not want war, but he had no choice. Sadly, he asked Congress for a declaration of war. Congress approved the declaration on April 6, 1917. It was not long before American soldiers reached the European continent. They marched in a parade through the streets of Paris. The people of France gave them a wild welcome. They cheered the young Americans. They threw flowers at the soldiers and kissed them.
The Americans marched to the burial place of the Marquis de Lafayette. Lafayette was the French military leader who had come to America's aid during its war of independence from Britain. The United States wanted to repay France for its help more than 100 years earlier. An American army officer made a speech at the tomb. He said, "Lafayette, we are here."
And so the Americans were there. They were ready to fight in the bloodiest war the world had ever known. Week by week, more American troops arrived. By October 1917, the American army in Europe totaled 100,000 men. The leader of that army was General John J. Pershing. Pershing's forces were not sent directly into battle. Instead, they spent time training, building bases, and preparing supplies. Then, a small group was sent to the border between Switzerland and Germany. The Americans fought a short but bitter battle there against German forces. The Germans knew the American soldiers had not fought before. They tried to frighten the Americans by waving their knives and guns in a fierce attack. The Americans surprised the Germans. They stood and fought back successfully.
Full American participation in the fighting did not come for several months. It came only after another event took place. That event changed the war and the history of the 20th century. It was the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. Its leader was Vladimir Lenin. The Russian Revolution began in the spring of 1917. The people of that country were tired of fighting Germany, and they were tired of their ruler, Tsar Nicholas. The Tsar was overthrown. A temporary government was established. It was headed by Alexander Kerensky. President Woodrow Wilson sent a team of American officials to Russia to help Kerensky's new government. The officials urged Russia to remain in the war.
Under Kerensky, Russia did keep fighting, but it continued to suffer terrible losses. Many Russians demanded an end to the war. Lenin saw this opposition as a way to gain control of the government. So he went to the city of Petrograd. There he led the opposition to the war and to Kerensky. Night after night he spoke to big crowds. "What do you get from war?" he shouted. "Only wounds, hunger, and death." Lenin promised peace under Bolshevik communism. Within a few months, he won control of the Petrograd Soviet. That was an organization of workers and soldiers.
Kerensky's government continued to do badly in the war. More and more Russian soldiers lost hope. Many fled the army. Others stayed, but they refused to fight. The end came in November 1917. Soldiers in Petrograd turned against Kerensky. Lenin ordered them to rebel, and he took control of the government within 48 hours. Russia was now a communist nation. As promised, Lenin called for peace. So Russia signed its own peace treaty with Germany. The treaty forced Russia to pay a high price for its part in the war. It had to give up a third of its farmland, half of its industry, and 90% of its coal mines. It also lost a third of its population. Still, it did not have real peace with Germany.
The treaty between Russia and Germany had a powerful influence on the military situation in the rest of Europe. Now, Germany no longer had to fight an enemy on two fronts. Its eastern border was quiet suddenly. It could aim all its forces against Britain, France, and the other allies on its western border. Germany had suffered terrible losses during 4 years of war. Many of its soldiers had been killed. And many of its civilians had come close to starving because of the British naval blockade. Yet, Germany's leaders still hoped to win. They decided to launch a major attack. They knew they had to act quickly before the United States could send more troops to help the Allies.
German military leaders decided to break through the long battle line that divided most of Central Europe. They planned to strike first at the north end of the line. British troops held that area. The Germans would push the British off the continent and back across the English Channel. Then they would turn all their strength on France. When France was defeated, Germany would be victorious. The campaign opened in March 1918. German forces attacked British soldiers near Amiens, France. The Germans had 6,000 pieces of artillery. The British troops fought hard, but could not stop the Germans. They were pushed back 50 kilometers. The attack stopped for about a week.
Then the Germans struck again. This time, their target was Ypres, Belgium. The second attack was so successful, it seemed the Germans might push the British all the way back to the sea. The British commander, Field Marshal Douglas Haig, ordered his men not to withdraw. Haig said, "There is no other course open to us but to fight it out." The British fought hard and stopped the attack. Losses on both sides were extremely high. Yet the Germans continued with their plan.
Their next attack was northeast of Paris in May. This time they broke the Allied line easily and rushed toward Paris. The German army chief, General Erich Ludendorff, tried to capture the French capital without waiting to strengthen his forces. He got close enough to shell the city. The French government prepared to flee. Allied military leaders rushed more troops to the area. The new force included 2 big groups of American Marines.
The heaviest fighting was outside Paris at a place called Belleau Wood. The American Marines were advised to prepare for a possible withdrawal. One Marine said, "Withdrawal? We just got here." The Marines resisted as the Germans attacked Allied lines in Belleau Wood again and again. Then they attacked the German lines. The battle for Belleau Wood lasted 3 weeks. It was the most serious German offensive of the war. The Germans lost.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.